Hello, how are you? Welcome to A Smattering of Heresy, a podcast where we snuggle up and have late-night chats about valuing solitude, creating an inner world, being present with nature, art, spirituality, and most of all, how these things come together in our healing. I'm Gemma. Avery is on my bed. I am in the closet. Avery is on my bed, and I don't know where Hattie is. She's probably on the desk, but she might also be in Avery's crate. It's actually so cute, because Avery's really big. I don't know, maybe like 92 pounds or something. So, you know, big dog. And Hattie's small, and so Hattie likes to get in Avery's crate and curl up in the middle of her bed, and she's just this tiny black ball in this giant crate, and Avery gets really grumpy about it, and I like it so much. I was born and there's a shore. Not to brag, but I have a cloaca. You can hide behind the word of all your voice has been missing. The first time I went back to Ireland with my family was when I was 5, and we stopped in London as well. We went to Ireland, and that was the majority of the trip, obviously. It was just like seeing family and stuff like that. But we stopped in London, and I have this memory of visiting Trafalgar Square, and I visited it more recently, and it's not really like this anymore. But when I was young, there was so many pigeons. They had like a pigeon problem. I was just having the time of my life. You could pay, you know, whatever, like a half a pound for a little cup of birdseed. And so I was feeding the birds and I was just living my best life. And my mom even took this picture of me like covered in birds, like at one with the universe, holding this little cup of bird food. However, not very far away was my sister. Turns out that whatever color the little bird food cups were, let's say green, she was wearing that color bow in her hair. So she had a green bow in her hair. And apparently the birds thought that she had a bird food cup in her head. And so they were like fucking bombing her and she was losing her shit. I guess it was like a really scary time. And she was just like running around trying to beat the birds off her head. I was oblivious. I have no memory of that, but ever since then, my sister fucking hates birds. And she calls them sky rats. So, yeah, you know, there's a spectrum. You may already like birds, or you may have had a semi-traumatizing experience as a child with birds. So, give me a moment to try and lure in some stragglers, because we're going to talk about birds today. Allow me to list birds that you might care about. Hedwig, the toucan in The Lion King, the toucan with the cereal, the seagulls in Finding Nemo, when you're sitting on a patio and birds start singing, when you see the red flash of a cardinal in the gray winter months, that meme about those parrots in the zoo that had to be separated because they were encouraging each other to swear at visitors. puffins, especially the puffin in the Swan Princess, Scuttle, Iago, Fox, the Scrooge McDuck family, the chickens in Chicken Run, the yellow bird that's friends with Snoopy, albatrosses in general because they're pure magic, the Rescuers Down Under, there's an albatross in that's very cool, fucking dragons. Birds are essentially dragons, so if you like dragons, you already basically like birds. Penguins, dinosaurs, owls, especially like a sleepy owl in a tree or like a hawk that tucks its wings in and straight up plummets out of the sky and catches itself just in time. Stop it. They may not be your favorite animal, but I think we can agree that birds can be very cool sometimes. So, I've been dipping my toe into bird watching. Last fall, I took Avery to White Rock, and we rounded a corner, and there were these great big white birds in the water, but, like, on, like, trees and stuff in the water, and I was kind of speechless. I just really didn't expect to see them, and there was a crowd of people who had all stopped what they were doing and were looking at the birds, but there was just a ton of really big birds out there, so Avery and I just sat for a while and looked at them, and it was really, really nice. I was curious what kind of birds they were, but I had no idea. And then, like, living downtown, so there's blackbirds everywhere, like, different kinds of blackbirds, but in the fall, I began to see, at sunset, they, like, basically all rise up into the sky, and they just do this really elaborate sort of dance, where they're in different clumps, and they're flying around, and then clumps join other clumps, and then break off into new clumps, and it's, like, kind of hard to explain how beautiful it is, but it's actually breathtaking, and it's this really intricate, really organized celebration, it looks like, you know? I mean, it doesn't seem like there's any purpose in it besides pleasure. Like, they're not hunting or anything. They're just all fly up in the sky and, like, fly around in, like, these really intricate braids, and then when it's dark enough, everybody hits the ground and roosts and just sings for a while. And it's just, like, so beautiful. Recently, I downloaded the Audubon app, and I've identified birds a couple of times, and it's such a rush, because I thought I would just take a picture of a bird and upload it, and it would be like, this is a bird, but it doesn't do that at all. It, like, is teaching you how to identify birds, so there's all these different categories, like, you know, the way the tail looks, or the way it's flying, or things, and you just input the information that you've got, you know, like, maybe I couldn't see the tail very clearly, but it was hopping, and it was small, around the size of this thing, and it had a yellow beak, and whatever, and then it comes up with a list, and you look through the list, and you either find it, or you don't, or you go back to looking at the bird, and you're like, oh, well, I guess it's not really hopping, is it? It's running, and then you change those things. Anyway, in the end, you, like, find it, and there's even a section with, like, bird calls and stuff, so when I found it, I was not completely sure, so then I was, like, listening to the bird calls in the phone, and then listening to those birds, and it was just so exciting. I had no idea what this bird was at all, and then suddenly I was like, oh, this is this bird, and it was just really cool. It's really natural to want to interact with wildlife, hiking or swimming, or people take pictures of sunsets. You know, I think it's kind of magic when you see animals you didn't expect to see, like when you're driving and you come across, like, a herd of deer, you just kind of stare at it and really get lost in the moment. There are things that we can do to have, like, really cool moments with wildlife in ways that are safe and good and helpful to them and helpful to us. And so today I wanted to talk about ways to positively affect the bird population where you live. I'm not an expert in it. Like, the opposite is true. Up until very recently, I didn't know anything, which is why I began researching this, because I was interested. I was like, I have no idea what one would do to, like, that would actually be helpful to birds. So I was really interested in what I was learning and decided to, like, make it into an episode. But it's really doable and makes a lot of sense. But if you are unaware of this information, like, me too, don't feel bad, you know. Birds weren't on my radar at all, so obviously none of this stuff would be on my radar either. Beginning with the Audubon Foundation, because they've been my favorite app so far. That's where I started researching. And I was really impressed with the website. There's a ton of useful info and tools and things, and they have ways to search specifically to your zip code. So there's this page called Survival by Degrees, and it discusses what's affecting the bird populations in your zip code specifically, and how to support the wild birds during climate change. And you can actually hover over each part of the map and even look basically by neighborhood and see which issues affect that part most, because it has them color-coded based on, like, how many of the main issues, and then you hover over the thing and it tells you which ones it's talking about. And it just, like, explains it really well. And then you can also look up, like, the species of birds that are the most in danger in your area, and it does it for the summer and for the winter, and it has pictures and information, and it also ranks them with level of threat and explains why that is, basically. And it's just like a ton of really interesting information that was a really big help. So if you're interested, that link's going to be in the show notes with the rest of the sources as usual. Sorry, I had to rearrange a little bit because it's pretty tight up in this closet. So my expectation was urbanization would be the main issue, but where I live, it was actually the third biggest issue. So the biggest one was drought and then heat and then urbanization, which really blew my mind. So drought and heat may not be the main issues where you live, but I will say that it actually affects a lot of the globe because with the rising temperatures, it affects more and more species. And it's not that like Norway is as hot as Dallas, you know, but the birds native to Norway evolved to live in a certain climate. So the fact that it's getting hotter is a really big deal for them, whether or not humans would comparatively consider it hot enough to make a big deal about. That's like not relevant, if that makes sense. So it's all relative based on, you know, the climate that they evolved to, as opposed to how quickly the climate's changing now, and they're not, you know, able to evolve that quickly. Obviously, it takes a really long time. So, yeah, so there's a disparity, which is kind of like a really fast version of climate change, but sometimes it's nice just to be a little bit inclusive, just in case someone isn't, you know, the most familiar with it, and that's just kind of like a fast version of, like, why temperature would even affect them. Especially somewhere that we don't think of as hot. But for them, it is hotter, and therefore, like, a big deal. If you're interested in looking up what birds specifically are in your area, how vulnerable they are, what's making them vulnerable, and what time of year that applies, you don't even have to do anything. You just type in your zip code, and it explains it all. So that's a ton of useful information to tailor your garden to. And looking at your own area is great because you might live, for example, in the Great Fly Lane, which is like this big sky road of migration. So light pollution might be the most, like the biggest thing. And then like drought and heat and urbanization and whatever, you know. As a little positive note, I was very surprised because I feel like most of what we hear, especially about things that need to change, is like lots of negative things that are a huge bummer. So I was really surprised to read this. Quote, though Texas is the leading U.S. producer of both crude oil and natural gas, it's also poised to become a nationwide leader in solar and currently leads the nation in wind generation, producing 1/4 of all U.S. powered wind electricity in 2017. As of 2019, Texas had more than 230,000 clean energy jobs, the second largest number in the country after California. To deal with sea level rise and impending water access concerns, the state has adopted the Coastal Resiliency Master Plan. Unquote. So that's just like kind of like a nice, encouraging little note. Like, you know, nice. You know, some progress. That's dope. Especially where you wouldn't necessarily expect it. Okay, so how to support birds in heat. Shade, water, and native plants, especially those with berries and stuff. A shallow bird bath is great, 1 to 2 inches of water, and in like a shady area is good, or in an area with some brush coverage so that they can relax a little bit and don't feel as exposed. It's really important to keep the bird bath clean, and in extreme heat, one website mentioned adding like a block of ice in the morning. Which may sound bananas, but depending where you live, you know, in the summer, shallow water gets extremely hot. Like here, if you were to put your fingers in a bird bath in like 4 p.m., it would like kind of hurt. So that was like one thing that they had mentioned, that during the time of year when it's extremely hot, like adding ice that can thaw throughout the day would make the water usable for them for a little bit longer. So that's something to try. Another main way that they deal with heat is by limiting their daytime activity. So actually the way that we trim our shrubs and stuff really, really affects them. So letting your shrubs grow out and not be as trimmed allows them like better sleeping areas to roost during the day and be more covered is like super helpful to them. they're relying on those places to sleep and then, you know, do activity when it's cooled down a little bit. And even in that spirit, if it is, like, really hot, even an awareness of, like, when you let your dog in the backyard could be great. Let's say it's 9 a.m. and it's starting to get really hot outside, like it's already hitting 90 and it's just gonna get hotter, and you see some birds outside at the bird bath, maybe just like give them like 20 minutes, you know, and then let the dog out. They probably won't be able to use the bird bath for much longer anyway. Choosing not to disturb them and giving them a chance to do what they need to do before they can't is really thoughtful. So some notes on drought. You know, obviously bird baths as well. Adding like broken bits of terracotta in the middle of a larger bird bath can be great because it can be a little landing area that they can use. And then for drought, a big part is actually the food supply. So for example, the parents might die and then the young birds are not getting the support they need long enough to where they can really go get their own food really confidently. So having like bird feeders and stuff could be really helpful for them, as well as, you know, plants dying in the drought and there being just less food around in general for native birds, but also migrating ones. A lot of times in nature documentaries, they talk about how birds will like scare other birds away from their spot. There was even this story about this bird that would like stuff grass and stuff in the birdhouses, like in the neighbor's yards, because like he didn't want any other birds around. So like whenever they would take the grass out, he would just go and stuff the grass like back in the birdhouses so nobody could use them, which is really funny. So I don't know, there's a little bit of that too, where you just kind of have to have a sense of humor because like, you know, nature's gonna do what it's gonna do. So anyway, basically like it's not about like replacing their food supply or anything. It just gives them a little bit less stress of the situation of a drought. So, speaking of bird feeders, here's a quote about squirrels. So, quote, "If squirrels are the bane of your bird feeder, purchase the metal bird feeder that has a pressure-sensitive perch. Not only will this keep the squirrels out, it will prevent the larger birds from bullying the smaller birds at the feeder. I have two of these feeders. One is set high enough for the woodpeckers can come for shelled peanuts, and the other is set for smaller birds so the crows and grackles can't monopolize the feeder. Place the feeder near bushes or trees, but not close enough so that the squirrels can jump to them. To slow down climbing, use a metal shepherd's crook, grease with vegetable shortening, or purchase a baffle if the gray squirrels become too adept at climbing." And I'm pretty sure a baffle is that thing we've all seen where that squirrel went swinging around and it was like, "You came in like a wrecking ball," and the squirrel's like swinging around the thing. I'm pretty sure that's what they're talking about. Most people are unaware of mice and rats raiding the bird feeders at night. While the population of rodents is necessary to feed the owls and hawks, no one wants in overabundance. So using the metal bird feeders with the spring-loaded perch is also useful for, the rodents not being able to get into it. Or you could bring the bird feeders in at night if that doesn't feel like too much of a hassle. So yeah, so there's like different kinds of bird feeders. So there's like bird seed, but there's also ones that do meat. So like there's like blocks of suet you can buy. There's bloodworms, mealworms, and crickets, which are all kind of expensive. But an alternative to those things, if like me, you would really prefer to not do any of that, a wonderful thing you can do that's just as good is simply not using insecticide in your yard. So that the birds can eat the actual insects that are in your actual yard. So I'm not saying like you don't ever treat ant mounds or allow every ornamental plant to be ravaged by insects. Just try to be mindful about it. Try not to use pesticides that are toxic and give the birds a chance to deal with insects. And then if it's, you know, getting out of hand, you can kind of use some insecticide to like help with that. But also just like giving the birds a chance to eat the insects is like a win-win. So just something to bear in mind. Okay, for all my people out there with the sky rat mentality, you might be thinking, "Gemma, that's super great, but I don't want birds in my yard, and I definitely don't want to encourage them to come back." And so I get that a little bit, like, in my personal opinion, it's not your yard when it comes to non-humans. It's very much like their yard too. But regardless of whether or not you agree with me about that, there are other ways to care for them in this new world humans have created that's much more difficult for them to thrive. Like, we can still support them in ways that would limit any direct interaction that you might have with them or would be like of minimum inconvenience. So one really excellent thing is helping them avoid glass collisions with the windows in your space. So I personally just like don't wash my windows very often, and I've never had a bird hit them, so that kind of works fine. But if you know, aren't down for that, then like just adding glass decals can be great. One of my sources said, hitting glass kills up to 1 billion birds annually in the US. So it's a really big thing to help that not happen in your space. Ooh, can you hear Avery? Hello, Averindo. So pesticide, like we already talked about, and you can often use like non-toxic things. There might be non-toxic ways of dealing with fire ants, then that would be super cool. I'm not aware of it. That doesn't mean it's not there, and so that would be great. My gardens have mostly been indoor, so I have a lot more experience with that. For example, mealybugs or aphids. Ladybugs work really well for getting rid of them, but I don't like let loose ladybugs in my apartment because it doesn't make any sense. So a lot of times I'll mix dish Dawn and water and spray that onto the plants, and it works really, really well. Like, it is perfect for aphids, and for mealybugs it works pretty well. I just have to do it a few times before it really like gets rid of them, but I prefer it to alcohol. Although rubbing alcohol isn't bad for the plant, but then if it gets in the soil it does get a little bit hard, so I just prefer to do the Dawn mixed with water, and it's worked really, really well for me. Light pollution is a big one. We talked about the great flyaway. Sound pollution is a big one. Keeping your cats inside is a huge deal. So the American Bird Conservatory said that cats kill 2.4 billion birds annually in the US. 2.4 billion, that's fucking insane. So it's a really big deal, and I think it's important just generally to not assume that we are the exception to the rule. If your cat enjoys being outside, then they should get to be outside, but just be responsible about it. Like, harness train them, and you can take them on walks, or even if not on walks, like, you can just take them around your backyard, like, on a harness. You know, be careful with your windows. Make sure that you're not setting up a situation where the cat's going to be able to get out. Those things are basically free, and it just takes a little bit of time and patience. And it also ensures that your cat isn't being denied a source of pleasure in their own life, but you're being responsible with it and, like, being honorable about it, taking responsibility for the birds where you live and making sure that they're not in danger, so, like, everybody can be safe and happy, basically. So reducing the amount of lawn you have and increasing the amount of plants you have is amazing, especially native plants. Native plants and non-native plants, it's kind of what you think, like stuff that always grew here versus stuff that was brought over here. And then invasive plants is like another level, stuff that was brought over here and has been like taking over. So it's worth paying attention to that. And also, like, it doesn't have to be a garden if you don't have the space for that. If you just want to toss some plants in some pots or use some window planters and stuff, that's a really wonderful thing. On that note, I wouldn't worry at all about it being pretty enough or not, because un-Pinteresty gardens are fabulous. Unraked leaves, plants with old flowers, fallen branches are all like really, really good for the environment. They help birds forage and provide shelter, things like that. And like we talked about before, like not trimming your shrubs very often, all of that's great. So like, there's really nothing to be embarrassed about in terms of like not being a good enough gardener, because even like the things that seem unsightly are actually like really, really good. Picking up the trash that you see, especially plastics. And then the last one I kind of have here is the concept of the honorable harvest and biodiversity. So I'm not going to go deep into the honorable harvest because I don't know enough about it. Robin Zimmerman, I think is her name.
Hey, editing Gemma here. It is not Robin Zimmerman. It's Robin Wall Kilmer. Let me spell her last name. Boopity bop, boopity boop. Where is it? Kimmerer. So, I fully made up her name. I'm not sure what I was thinking. Anyway, back to the podcast.
She writes Gathering Moss and Braiding Sweetgrass, and she's this scientist who focuses on moss, and she's really cool, and she's also a Native American woman, and she writes these books that are a mixture of science and just like about the experiences of modern Native Americans trying to like reconnect with their culture. It's really fantastic. And in Braiding Sweetgrass, she talks a lot about the honorable harvest, the Native American way of harvesting, and it goes hand in hand really well with biodiversity. So I think the number in the honorable harvest is 1 out of every 8, I think is what they do.
Hey, editing Gemma here again. I just feel like I wasn't very clear with this whole section, so forgive the audio quality. Hey, Avery. Basically, the honorable harvest in like the most simplified version is picking 1 out of every 8, and it complements biodiversity like perfectly because biodiversity is the more scientific jargon or whatever, but basically like it's just about how the it's like, okay, hang on, Gemma, you can do this. It's basically like A, we want some. B, the animals need to eat some or in some way like use this plant. C, not all of the seeds are going to be fruit, like actually reproduce. D, out of the ones that reproduce, we're now working with a really small group. And they need as much of that group as they can possibly get. So biodiversity is really about that last part. It's about like keeping a variety of characteristics and qualities within the gene pool, just a lot of diversity within a species so that when stuff comes up, the whole group isn't wiped out because they're not all have one set of strengths and one set of weaknesses. Like there's a lot of different things happening with different character qualities and stuff. And so some plants or people or what have you die, but they don't all go. Others are able to survive. And that's how, like, as a species, they remain resilient and strong and are able to last long term. So that last group is super important. But like I said, there's all these other things that are happening. The way plants are interacting with each other, the way the weather is, the way animals are interacting with it, humans are interacting with it, just not being lucky. And so some of the plants, not being fruitful at all, et cetera, et cetera. And so that's like one of the really excellent, valuable things about the honorable harvest is this idea of 1 in 8 is like such a simple way of remembering to really consider biodiversity whenever we're in nature and whenever we're harvesting anything from the wild or foraging or anything else. I think this extremely simplified version of the honorable harvest, 1 out of every 8, is a good thing to keep in mind. And if you are like audiobooks, Robin Wall Kilmer reads them herself, and she has such a lovely voice. And obviously, she does a million times better explaining it and has like lived experience with it too, and all these wonderful things. So, it's just really, really good. And I found it to be a really useful way of wrapping my mind around that. That's the basic idea, I guess. I'm gonna hop back in to the original recording, probably with the bananas anecdote, but we shall see. I just wanted to say that a little bit more clearly because it matters. Because A, I don't really go into the honorable harvest very much because I really didn't feel like qualified to speak to it, and I didn't want to be just another person like using native knowledge to like make themselves blah blah blah, So I just like almost didn't want to bring it up or speak much on it. But then at the same time, it's like really, really valuable. And it's also really cool that they already understood biodiversity, essentially, you know, and like created a harvesting structure around that. That's like really fucking cool. So I did also at the same time want to bring it up, but not get into it that much. So when I was listening to the recording, I was like, you know what? I'm not sure I'm doing a great job talking about this. So editing Gemma decided to just come on in here. Anyways, how about them bananas? What's going on there?
If we're picking, like, let's say we're picking flowers or something, a lot of us are familiar with the concept of not picking more than half, but that's actually still too much. It's not just about what we need and then what the plant needs to reproduce. Even if we're leaving enough of something for them to reproduce, it's not necessarily enough for them to reproduce and to continue being a strong species. If we're narrowing down the gene pool by wiping out portions of the species, it actually has like a massive effect. Examples are bananas. So bananas, there's like a really good chance we're not going to have bananas anymore because they've become a monocrop, which means that the gene pool is way too small. It's like one fucking gene pool now. Or that's not the right way to put that, but I think you get what I mean. They're all super related and like there's no diversity at all. There's this pest that's attacking banana trees now, and there's no defense at all because all the banana trees have the same genetics, so they're all equally susceptible to this disease. So it's not like some of the banana trees get taken out, but some of the banana trees are a little bit stronger in different ways. Like, bananas are just like fucked. So you know, people are doing the best they can to hang on to bananas, but they're really very much probably not going to be around a lot longer. So that's just something to bear in mind, especially if you're picking flowers in the wild or something like that. One out of every eight. Better yet, like, just enjoy them and let them continue living. But sometimes, you know, you really want to and whatever, and sure, like, enjoy yourself. Just, you know, bear in mind biodiversity and taking as little as possible and much less than maybe you want. Okay. So now changing gears a little bit. What I was thinking about a lot writing these notes was that a lot of times conversations around the environment can be really triggering. The underlying message can feel like a lot of shrinking, like have a smaller carbon footprint, don't eat meat, etc. You know, there's a lot of like be smaller, be less, take up less space. Even like some of the examples I gave today could be that way, like making your lawn smaller or turning off your lights. You know, the sort of subliminal message can sometimes feel like you don't deserve to be here. You don't get to live on this planet. Like, you're making things worse by being here. And that fucking sucks. And so a lot of times conversations around the environment, like, it's easy to come away from it just feeling like shit about yourself. And then also feeling kind of grumpy and resentful because you're like, well, that's really not fair. And then not really being interested in doing anything to help it because you feel hurt and resentful and like there's no point anyway because it's already too far gone and you're already fucking it up just by existing, you know? So I just kind of want to call attention to that for a second and recognize that like a big part of why we feel that way is simply like the language we use to talk about it. So it's not that the concept is triggering, or that the concept of even like changing the resources that we use, that's not necessarily like an upsetting concept at all, but the language we use around it of like having a smaller carbon footprint or using less plastic, etc., can create a knee-jerk reaction, especially for people where there's like a small part of you that was made to feel like it's not good enough, or you didn't deserve to take up space, you didn't get to have feelings, you didn't get to have your own thoughts or needs. You didn't deserve X, Y, or Z. Like maybe you get full of panicky feelings or guilt or just heavy passivity. At moments like that, it's amazing to know and to be able to remind yourself that like you get to take up all of the space all of the time. And that's like in no way contradictory to this. Like you get to take up all of the space all of the time. So whether that's being fat physically and like physically taking up space unapologetically, or the cardinal sin of like being unattractive, you know, like you deserve to exist in this world. Like you don't owe anyone fuckability. Like it's, you know what? Like it's your birthright. existing is your birthright. And you get to be here and exist and take up space and do all of it, plus tax. You get to have emotional needs. You get to have different opinions. You get to take up space in all of the ways that feel good and healing to you. It's a good thing that you're here. The planet is improved by your presence. Not just on a human social level. Think about all the things that you've done. Dogs you've adopted, organizations you've donated to, ways you've made changes in your life that felt doable, like maybe not buying styrofoam anymore or eating less meat or different things that you've done that you felt like were doable. Like, those things were all excellent. You've done a lot of good here. Being challenged to improve our relationship with the planet and with animals and with oppressed groups for that matter doesn't negate your birthright to exist unapologetically, not in any way, because the conversation really isn't about taking things away from you, but sometimes it's worded that way. So if we reword it a little bit, if I could offer you a different perspective, it's not about taking something away, it's opening up your world so that there's so much more. It's changing the way that we see things with less ownership and more sharing with non-humans, more interdependence, more recognition that that's natural and is actually already happening all around us all the time. Separateness and independent living is an illusion. So when we feel like independent of nature and like we're doing things on our own, like, it's an illusion. Even if you lived on a rock and grew your own food and sewed your own shoes, you were still born and presumably raised. You still receive serotonin from the sun and nutrients from the plants that you're growing. And you still share in the resources of your rock with the other creatures that live there, no matter how small. So, like, you are not separate at all. And the thing is that you're not asked to occupy less space on your rock. Like, you're not asked to float in the ocean exclusively because you don't deserve your rock. No. The ask here is that you acknowledge that you rely on others and they rely on you. You rely on birds and they rely on you. And if that doesn't feel true, BB, I'm sorry, but you're incorrect. Unless you've personally created every molecule in the universe, you are inheriting everything in your life, you are inheriting from others. Once we begin to see how much is shared, we become more and more aware. And the circle of living things involved in our lives is exponentially larger than we might realize. If you eat, you are relying on pollinators. You rely on snakes and they rely on you. You rely on oceans and they rely on you. You rely on coffee and it relies on you. And I could actually elaborate on all of those, but I think you get the point. Changing our perspective to sharing and to passing on and inheriting from others is really different, and I think it has a much more freeing tone. Because it's like the opposite. Like, instead of removing or being less or not deserving, it's all about how much you're needed and how much more you're a part of than you might realize. More community, more connection, more gratitude, and more recognition of the beautiful, complicated planet that we live on. There's more need for you to be here than you might realize. There are untold multitudes of living things that benefit from your presence and the resources that you share with them, the ones you're aware of and the ones you're not. I actually just want to wrap up with the idea that perfection is not the goal. It's okay if you don't recycle, like, you're not a terrible person. It's okay if you bought a golden doodle instead of rescuing a dog from a pound. It's okay if you are flawed and make choices that aren't the best, because we all do. If you like Chick-fil-A or bought stuff from Shein or turn off the TV instead of watching the news about the latest school shooting, believe it or not, that doesn't make you a bad person, and that doesn't mean that there's no point in trying because you'll never do it good enough anyway. Like, just try to give yourself a little bit of grace instead of jumping out of the conversation, because perfectionism is not the goal. Just try to do plus one more effort, which is something we talked about in the episode about like helping yourself on hard days. Like instead of doing the thing perfectly, just do plus one more effort and that's like enough. So that could be working on your mindset, and like your plus one more effort might be that when you notice squirrels or rats in public, let's say, you pay attention to your internal dialogue. Maybe you notice that you have a desire to eradicate rats, and maybe you challenge yourself about that without being mean to yourself. That's like a really big plus one, and that's all mindset, but our thoughts create our reality, so that's like a big fucking deal if you choose to work on. Maybe through plus one here and plus one there, you can get to a place where you feel responsible to the animals you interact with, and you try to steward the resources you both rely on well. That's super manageable. It's not moving into a tree and not climbing down until logging is condemned. Like, that's rad, and I'm really grateful that people did that and that we get to experience and enjoy the sequoias in the redwoods. But, like, you don't have to know everything about the oppression of a group in order to listen when someone's talking and not contradict them and not invalidate them. You can choose not to retweet or give attention to things that are not helpful, that are actually unhelpful. You could throw your cigarette butts away properly instead of flicking them on the ground. You could buy wind-powered electricity instead of fossil fuels. Aim for like plus one more in every interaction that it occurs to you. Not every interaction, just when it occurs to you, and that's plenty, like that's more than enough. With practice, it'll occur naturally more often, and you may find yourself behaving in a way that you respect and are proud of. Thank you for spending time with me today. I want to give a big thank you to Faye West for our amazing theme song. A big thank you to Avery and Hattie for being quiet and letting me record this. A big thank you to my patrons. I have four now. Last episode I had three and now I have four. Get wrecked. just thanks for being here. Thanks for hanging out. I'd love to hear from you about your thoughts on this. asmatteringofheresy@gmail.com is the email. And I also put a listener story submission on my website, so you could submit it through that email, or you could go to www.gemmaguiomard.com, GemmaGuiomard. Smattering of Heresy, no A, is on Instagram, and yeah. So, if you stick to the end of the credits, I tell a secret, and my secret for today is I haven't been doing my laundry lately. My mom's been doing it. I'm a 31-year-old lady, and my mom's been doing my laundry, and it's really, really nice of her. I don't know. Just sometimes, like, life is really on top of you, and I've been really struggling with, like, really basic stuff for the past few months, and so over Christmas, my family kind of noticed because they came to my apartment, and they were like, oh, wow, are you good, homie? And I was like, nah, bro, I am mentally ill. But the past few weeks, I meet my dad once a week and give him my laundry, and my mom does it, and then she gives it back, and it's just, like, really, really sweet and thoughtful. And, I guess it's not, like, a secret, but it's also not something I'm, like, shouting from the rooftops, because, there is so much privilege to that and stuff, and so, I don't know. I'm grateful for it. So, thank you for hanging out with me. I hope you have an amazing rest of your day. I hope that you're nice to yourself about your laundry. And, thanks for being here. I'll talk to you soon. Goodbye.